Hello, and welcome to Season 5, Episode 7 of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. I'm Becca, and this is a podcast that features members of the Virtual Coffee community. Virtual Coffee is an intimate group of developers at all stages of their coding journey, and they're here on this podcast sharing their stories and what they've learned. And we're here to share it with you. Here with me today is my co-host, Dan.
Hey, Becca. Today, we are talking with Meg Gutschall. And Meg is a Ruby on Rails developer. She has a passion for open source and tech for good. She, on the podcast, talked about community building, and all the stuff that she's done with communities throughout her time, and what brought her to her love for Ruby. And also, if you know Meg, you might know that she's from Philly. So that came up once or twice in the podcast.
90.
Yeah. 90 million times, which was delightful too. I have a special place in my heart for Philadelphia, so it was it's always good to hear. Also, Meg is another one of our big volunteers at Virtual Coffee, like Andrew last week. Sorry, and so she talked what she's been doing with her accountability buddies group. Accountability buddies, and all of the work she's done, making spaces at Virtual Coffee for everyone.
Yeah, we're happy to have Meg here with us today. And actually, before we get started with the podcast, Meg is here for a special announcement.
This episode is dedicated to our friend Mike Rogers. We miss you, we love you, and we'll never forget you.
Thanks, Meg. We start every episode of the podcast like we start every Virtual Coffee. We introduce ourselves with our name, where we're from, what we do, and a random check-in question. We hope you enjoy this episode. Today's question is, what board game would you play for the rest of your life if you could only play one board game? My name is Becca. I am a technical community builder from a small town in Ohio, and if I could play one board game, I'm using the word board game like kind of loosely, so a table game maybe. I really like Splendor. I've been into that. I'm not very good at it. I lose all the time. I think I lost to my 12-year-old, but I like it, so I'll just keep playing Splendor.
Splendor's cool. Hi, I'm Dan. I do development stuff in Cleveland, Ohio. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of good board games. Do the rules allow for expansions, and stuff, or is it just the base?
No, you can only play the base.
Only the base. Okay. Because that, that changes things, right?
All about that base.
Catan is really good. Having to pick one though is tough. I think I'm going to go with Dominion because I don't know. There's a lot of different combinations. Like each game is a little bit different, So it's a little different options. So I'm sure there's, the factorial, I'm sure there's some way to calculate how many different, setups you could do for each one, but I'm not going to do that right now because, it's late at night for me. So yeah, that's my answer. Dominion.
My name's Meg and I'm from Philly, the home of Gritty, and I would play Yahtzee for the rest of my life. Yahtzee's my jam. I love it.
I like Yahtzee. Yeah. I would lose the dice, though, so then I would be out of luck. I couldn't play anymore.
Yeah, but then you can just ransack your other board games and find 5 more dice. It's pretty... Yeah,
it's true because you're not allowed to play any of the other ones. So,
that's true. I have a large collection of games. Yeah. So then, all right. Well, welcome, Meg. We're happy to have you here with us today. This is like kind of a special episode because we're recording in the evening and we normally don't do that. So I don't know if I need to apologize for that in advance. My brain stops working at 3:45 every day. So
nighttime edition.
Welcome to the evening edition. Well, we're going to let you get us started with your origin story. So how did you get to this point of your career?
Oh, geez. That is kind of a long story, but I'll compact it. I went to college at Temple University. That's in Philadelphia, once again, home of Gritty, the mascot for the Flyers. Dan earlier said it was for the Philly.
Oh, I know. I knew it was wrong as soon as I said it.
Yeah, Gritty's the Flyers mascot. And I studied Spanish at Temple and graduated with a Bachelor's of Arts and didn't want to teach. And then I was like, oh, what am I going to do? Translation jobs didn't come too easily. So I just kind of wound up doing admin jobs. And I got a job. My first job was at a field hockey coaching and training facility for girls 18 and under. And it happened to be like the number one facility in the state of PA. And I just knew nothing about field hockey. I still don't. But like, I just communicated with the parents about, you know, having their kids register in the leagues and stuff and set up tournaments. And I learned so much just through like running business. And also I did some web development there just because it was me and my boss and one other employee. And then after that, one of the parents, once I had left, she asked if I was looking for another place and to work. And she worked at a IT recruiting place, and they were looking for an admin. So that's how I got into tech. I didn't know really anything about it. And once again, I upkept their website, and I saw, you know, what people were making, and I was like, dang, that's a lot. And these kids coming out of college, I was just like, yeah, I'm definitely smarter than you are. Like, why am I not doing this? Why am I not trying this? So I took like a Coursera course. Tried it, loved it. It was like HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, just a very basic web thing. And so since I loved it so much, I dove into it with the free code camp, boot camp, or no, sorry. Oh my gosh. Flatiron boot camp. But although I do very much recommend free code camps, freecodecamp.org online. At Flatiron Boot Camp, and that's where Becca and I met. And yeah, just that was a lot of work, self-paced online while working three jobs, like part-time. It was more like freelancing, because I was consulting for a job, and then I have a tenant, and I had a pet sitting business for a time pre-COVID. And yeah, that took a while. It was a lot of work, but it paid off, because now I'm a consultant with Penn Medicine, and talking with my manager about getting hired on full time, hopefully before the end of June. So
that's awesome.
That's awesome. I think I'm trying to think of the first time you and I chatted, but I know that when you were at Flatiron, I was always impressed. So it's like self-paced, remote. I didn't know anybody. I like hardly talked to anyone there, just because it's kind of hard to, like, I don't know, make friends online when you don't see people. Like, you can't like accidentally run into them. And you were running a study group there that met up. And I was always like, wow, I honestly thought you worked at Flatiron because you were so active in the Slack and doing all these things. And I was like, that's awesome. And then I came and I gave a talk. I think you invited me to give a talk. Mm-hmm. I was going to give a talk at a conference. And I think you were like, hey, want to practice here? And I just remember it going so horribly. And I'm like, this is going to be really awful. But like, I appreciated kind of being able to do that in a safe space, like where nobody was going to get up and walk out of the room because it was so bad. But it like helped me to recognize like where I really needed to practice and I needed to work on, you know, getting through that talk.
You know, I remember it differently. but yeah, you... So you're definitely not the only person who thought I was an instructor. I would get hit up by a lot of other students, like asking for help and stuff. And I literally had to impose a limit for myself of how much I'd help people per week. And I would just tell them, I reached my weekly limit of helping people. So I'm sorry, but you should ask this person. I know they're on that section right now. And the group you talked about, I started with another classmate. Her name's Sherry Martin. And she came to me with this idea. We called it Code Talk because she said she talked to someone about at their boot camp, they had took turns presenting code and talking about it and using technical terms talking about it and how she thought that was so cool and like helpful, and she wanted someone to help her start this. And she actually left Flatiron early for a job. She's just like woman on a mission, could not stop her. And so we would do technical challenges. I think it was every week. And then when I found people like you who actually had something to present or maybe going to a conference, I would pitch them that, hey, do you want to practice? And I remember your talk being like good, and it was like you said, a relaxed like pitching it like, hey, yeah, just practice here, we'll record it so you can watch it back and see how you did. And I remember you saying to me, I realized that I need to read off a script, so that's what I did for the actual conference, and it went so much better. And I was like super happy that like you practicing in front of people helped you figure that out before the big day.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so many people are like, oh no, you don't read off of, like, you shouldn't read off of anything or like have notes. Like, you should be able to do it. I can't do that. Like, my memory does not work that way. I have to have something in front of me. I distract myself all the time, or I'll go off on tangents, or I'll remember that I meant to say this thing 5 minutes ago. And now, like, what am I supposed to do? Do I go back to that point? But so it was really, really helpful to like have that experience.
Thanks.
And I mean, I feel like you've done a lot of that throughout all of the stuff that you're doing. And it, like at Virtual Coffee now, you know, you've come on and you have like a really great knack for knowing people. I love that you said that you set limits back then, because one, I think that's really good and really important, because it could be easy to like to help everybody all the time.
Oh my God, yes.
but like you have these connections too. Like, you knew, okay, I can't do this, but I can connect you with other people. And I think that's so great because you're able to help so many more people and like hopefully preserve your own self from falling into total exhaustion by creating boundaries, but also like showing that it's okay to have boundaries with things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think like I said in the beginning with all the work and just like pushing through, like you said, it wasn't like Flatiron didn't do a great job of creating a community for the online self-paced students. They're just like, here's Slack. Here you go. And so I did kind of what I started doing with the Accountability Buddies group, just posting incessantly and being so annoying that you have to be my friend and participate. Like, oh my gosh, okay, fine. This person's always posting. I guess I'll go and see what it's all about. And it's like, oh, they're not a crazy nut job. And there's other people here. Oh, this is pretty cool, you know? So, yeah, I have to keep a little bit of my crazy nut job in check when people actually show up. It's hard.
Can you tell us a little bit more about like the accountabilities group itself and you know what sort of what it is and you know maybe how it started a little bit?
Yeah. Okay, so it was Sarah Strong who put a post on Slack somewhere and was just asking for an accountability partner when job searching because, you know, it's super fun when you write cover letters and fill out applications with like your address and you go and have to send in your resume and then type in everything that's in the attachment you just sent. Like, that's all really fun. Also getting rejection letters and all that stuff. Super fun. So you want to share the fun with other people, right? I'm being sarcastic just in case anyone can tell. But yeah, it's like, I'm sure a lot of, gosh, so many people in tech know when looking for a job, it's a slog. Just like going through all this and getting in your inbox, like, oh, are you interested in this? And like another recruiter just shooting out emails to whoever. And it's nice to have other people that identify with that and to have just like a block of time set aside. Okay, I'm going to work towards my goal of getting a job and this is what I'm going to do. And these other people are going to show up and do the same thing. And so her and I and Aditi Green, I'm pretty sure that's her last name, we showed up and it was nice. And I think we did it 2 weeks in a row. And then Sarah couldn't make it. So I just kind of kept it going and took it over. And she's like, oh, no, yeah, that's great. Like, definitely do that. And a lot of people who have joined our job seeking accountabilities group have since left because they're working during the meetup time. So,
yay.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And yeah, like people come in and say, like, just some people come in and they're like, oh, it feels like I've applied for so many and it's just so many rejections. And, you know, it's, I feel for them because, you know, I've been there. You guys have been there. But I'm just like, okay, you got this. You can keep going. And I love it when people just drop in, even if they're not job seeking. A lot of times, Brett will drop in from Australia when he's wrapping up his day on Friday morning, our Friday morning, his Friday evening, I guess.
Yeah, it's late.
Yeah.
What is this?
It's like his family's in bed and he's just like, oh yeah, I'm just, you know, why don't you come say hi and keep you company while I do this. And
when you, so you rent it through Zoom and you have recently been breaking it into different rooms, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because sometimes we have a good amount of people come out and, you know, everyone has their own way of working. If someone needs it to be a little quieter, you have like a breakout room for quiet co-working, or you're just in that flow, but you have the presence of another person. Like somehow that just makes you feel more accountable having someone there. And then since this month we're doing like job search type monthly challenge, I've been adding breakout rooms for people who want resume reviews or who are working on their cover letters, if they have anything specific. And got their resume reviewed, say they can meet with whoever reviewed it in a breakout room. And I guess I'll be adding different ones soon. The elevator pitch room and portfolio stuff room.
Yeah, the second half. Oh, it starts today. I was off today, so I keep forgetting it's Monday.
What? I didn't work today. It can't be Monday.
When my kids are home. Like, my kids have been home since last Wednesday. So all sense of time is, like, it's gone.
They're slackers. They need to be back in school.
Right? I know. I love it. Having that accountability does make a huge difference because sometimes it just seems so hard. Like, you don't want to do it one more time. You don't want one more rejection. You're tired of writing cover letters. But knowing that there's somebody else there seems to make it feels easier when you have that accountability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes you need to just vent to other people who get it or celebrate with other people. Like, oh my God, I just got an interview, or I just got this rejection email right now. And, you know, either one, you're going to get a supportive response for either event, just from virtual coffee in general. But if you're in the accountability buddies session, yeah, you can definitely find what you need there. What are you looking around at?
There is like something, there's some noise happening in my room on the other side of the room, but we don't have animals and none of my children are in here. So like my 12-year-old is convinced that there's a ghost in our house because he heard a splash in his closet one night and then there was all this water on the floor, okay? But it didn't drip from anywhere. There wasn't a glass or anything there. I was like, I wonder if it was a pregnant mouse and its water broke. And then I was like, that's too much water for a pregnant mouse, I think. Anyway.
So. Wait, Your 12-year-old came up with a pregnant mouse.
No, that was me. I came up with a pregnant mouse. He thought it was a ghost. So.
Oh, my gosh.
I thought he thought it was the ghost of a pregnant mouse.
Well, that's even better. But we didn't find any mice babies either.
Let's not touch that one for now.
Leave that.
Oh, what if you opened the door at the closet and Gritty was staring out at you?
That would be super freaky.
Yeah, right?
What if it, the ghost of Gritty with the ghost of the pregnant mouse?
Oh my god.
But Gritty's still alive.
Mm.
He can never
die. Also, I think the mouse would probably not be pregnant anymore if her water broke. So the ghost of the once pregnant mouse being held by real life Gritty.
This is going downhill fast.
Told you I'm not responsible for my brain at this time of night.
Oh, man.
Can I just mention that we're mentioning Gritty. This is the eighth time. Because it was a request from Party Tom for this episode. And Party Tom gets what Party Tom wants.
That's right.
That's right.
So, Gritty. We, you know, Meg, I forget if you said this on the recording or not, but Meg asked on Slack for questions, you know, for her, for this podcast episode. And there was a lot of good questions, but a lot of them were about Philly because Meg is from Philly and, you know, Philly is pretty unique, you know, I don't know, and awesome. Yeah. But
you guys asked a lot of great questions.
Meg and I have talked about this, but I work with some people from Philly. The other side of Sprockets is based in Philly. And so I get a little bit of Philly culture just from that. And one of my favorite words that I've ever learned is the word John. And I'm sure I'm not saying it well because I'm, you know, from Cleveland and not John. Philly. But can you just, well, I suppose you'll have to spell it for our listeners. And then, and can you just sort of define it and then maybe use it in a sentence or two? Just as a native, you know, I always try to explain it to people, but it feels, you know, it doesn't feel right me talking about it, you know? So can you lay on some Philly knowledge for us?
Yes. John is spelled JAWN. It has nothing to do with sex work. That's the first thing that people think of when they hear that word. And,
is it?
What?
I've gotten that reaction pretty much every time that word comes up. So John is just in place of a thing. It's a thing. It can be used as like a noun or adjective. Or adverb, maybe verb. I'm not sure.
I mean, that's one of the things I love the most about John it is it. Its utility.
Yeah.
So can you?
I still don't understand what it means, though. Like, I need more than
it's
that.
A thing, like something.
Can you just like? Can you just use it?
Use it in a sentence.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, okay. For instance, today, Narando was ragging on Kirk for his hair being too long and saying he needed a haircut. Someone from Philly would say, yo, cut that, John.
Yeah. Or, all right, I'm going to try it out, but you tell me if it's wrong. It's, you know, but like, all right. So today I was writing some React, you know, stuff, and then I needed to save some state, so I used that use state John.
Yeah,
is that all right? Yeah, that seems. Yeah, I can do it. See, I have a little Philly. Yeah, I was saying I work with some Philly people, so I get a little exposure. That's right. It magnated me because I translated a Philly billboard. I only got one thing wrong.
Yeah.
So it's a placeholder word.
Yeah, yeah. It's a
like
word that
if
you can,
don't know, like a thingamabobber or whatchamacallit, that can be a John.
Yeah.
Right. If you're not from the 40s.
Version of thingamabobber, doodad, whatchamacallit, a who's it, what's it.
All right. There we go. I've got it now. Thank you.
That's awesome. Thank you for that. Thank you for kind of laying that down for us.
So we have now covered Philly things, and you are still in Philly,
yeah.
And you've talked about other things that you've done in the past as with you had an animal. What business?
Oh,
where you watched animals?
Business.
Okay. Yeah. And you have a Spanish degree. So How do these past experiences play into what you're doing now?
That's a great question. They make for interesting stories. That's one. For Spanish, it does come up in translation sometimes. In like working, and there's a lot of Spanish speakers in my area.
I imagine too, learning a different language when you're learning to code it, it's similar, right? There's overlap in how you learn and retain that knowledge.
Yeah, I am pretty sure that I wrote a blog post about. Yeah, I've read blog posts about like learning Spanish and learning code and how that was like similar. Is my Little Things Matter blog post.
Oh, I see it.
Yeah. So like very small things like, hey, I forgot a colon or whatever encoding makes stuff fail. And in Spanish, stressing the wrong syllable or like pronunciation.
Did I tell you my story about Spanish and sleeping and married before?
Yeah.
No, it's
yeah,
tired.
You did tell me. But I think you should tell it again.
When I was maybe 19, I went to language school in Costa Rica by myself. And then I had to take a taxi home or to the airport. And the cab driver, okay, so there's cansado and casado. One means tired, right? And one means married. And so I thought that he asked me if I was tired, and I said, a little bit, but he was really asking me if I was married, and so I told him a little bit, and then he asked me if he could hold my hand, and then I was afraid he was going to kill me, so I held his hand for a 40-minute ride to the airport. So I highly recommend not telling anybody that you're a little bit married. Just go. You can be fully married or fully tired, but don't hold the hand of a taxi crafter in Costa Rica.
Yeah, a little bit seems like probably the absolute worst answer to that question.
Yeah, so, well, I said I was tired, so.
Can I ask you which one's which?
I don't remember.
Lesson learned.
I'm going to
avoid
just
using
let
it at all costs.
Not know, because I want you to make that same mistake again.
No. Okay, sorry, I've gotten us off on a tangent again. Okay, I know what I wanted to ask. So we both went to Flatiron. It's a full stack boot camp, right? And I know for me, I really enjoyed learning Ruby and Rails. And I was like, I'm definitely going to be a Rails developer, which I was not. I went to, somebody hired me, I don't know why. And then I worked on React projects, which I thought was never going to happen. You have stuck with Ruby.
Great.
How did you stick with it? Did you feel that way? Or did you want to stick with Ruby? Or were you like, wherever I find a job? Or, you know, how did you make that decision?
I think you never forget your first. You know? Yeah, I really fell in love with Ruby. And in Flatiron, the order that they taught us, which now is flip-flopped, they did Ruby first, and then Sinatra and Rails frameworks, and then JavaScript with React and Redux frameworks. And I think that I was able to, I took a longer time going through Ruby, Sinatra, and Rails. So it allowed me to get like a really good appreciation for the language. And also a friend of mine from Flatiron, Heather Miller, she's down in DC, she invited me to this conference called Ruby for Good. And that's when I had just started Rails, both of us. And it was like, the people there were so nice. It was, I think, 3 days. Everyone was so nice and friendly. We were working on apps for social good, to do things for people. And I knew next to nothing, but people were still like, oh, you can totally help. You can definitely be, you know, a contributing member of our team. And that made me really fall in love with the Ruby community. And I found that that's a very universal mindset of the Ruby community. The people are very, very nice and welcoming and willing to teach. And similarly, that's how the Philly Tech community has been in my personal experience. Before the pandemic, I was networking a lot in person and found a lot of people very welcoming and open, like, to, you know, a woman in tech and someone from like a non-traditional path. And Philly's definitely a colorful city, like in different in ways of diversity, and it's blending into the tech community heavily. And I think that makes it very welcoming. And I saw just both of those in the Ruby community and Philly tech community. The issue was there wasn't a lot of Ruby on Rails in Philly at the time. So I was just like, oh no. So I was ready to get a job just doing anything. But then once the pandemic happened, like a silver lining of that was remote work. Now the world is my oyster. I could get a Rails job for anywhere, just working from my desk at home. So that definitely helped with my job search, having like that focus on Rails jobs. Like, this is what I love. This is what I want to do. And especially having like now I'm on the core team of Ruby for Good. And I really enjoy doing that and work that's meaningful and fulfilling. And that it helps people. So that was like something that I really would like to do as well. And I was targeting companies like that, that were Rails companies as well.
So your position with Ruby for Good is a volunteer position, right?
Yeah.
I was pretty sure that's, so can you talk a little bit more about like what you all do as an organization? I think you talked a little bit about their conference, but you know, can you just kind of explain Ruby for Good as a, you know, as an organization? And
you're saying, yeah, Ruby for Good is a nonprofit and it's volunteer led. Sean Marcia is the founder, and it's based in DC, so the membership is largely in DC, but definitely expanding. And basically it's uses something called skills-based volunteering, which is people in the tech community use their specialized set of skills like Liam Neeson, but they do good things with them. They build software for other nonprofits, and so that may be like a website or a sign up form or like an actual software system, something that it like are probably, I think it's the oldest project and probably the biggest, is called Human Essentials. It was rebranded from Diaper Base, and it had started out as inventory management system for diaper banks, and it started like that, and then it grew because they are like, okay, this is awesome. Now the diaper banks are receiving these products. They're giving the products to their partners like churches and food pantries and homeless shelters, who then distribute the products to families. So they wanted a way for their partners to track what was needed and who got stuff. So they made Partner Base to go along with Diaper Base. Then it's like, okay, well, these items aren't just diapers. They're also feminine care products, soaps, creams, like shampoos, things like that. So they kind of merged both of them together and called it Human Essentials. And we're serving almost 200 diaper banks right now. But then there's stuff like there's a lending library in Chicago that it's a circulation system for like tools and other types of equipment for this lending library. In CASA, a court appointed advocate. Let me look it up real quick. I don't want to.
Special advocate.
Court appointed special advocate. and that's just a system to track volunteer time. So it ranges for different needs. And it feels like it's all open source contribution. So people can get involved with just one project, do it like one or two pull requests and be done, or they can get involved heavily. And these projects have like weekly office hours and stakeholder meetings and things. And yeah, it's something that really spoke to me. And I'm a very organized person by nature, since I used to work as an admin. So I told Sean, I was like, yeah, let me help out however I can. And so he's like, yeah, let's awesome. Do this. Come on.
Yeah, I'm sure. No, that's really great. It seems like a really interesting organization. That sort of thing. I always wonder, so you make a product for another nonprofit, right? Does Ruby for Good end up maintaining that over time, or is it like a sort of a handoff kind of thing? Or, you know, this is just my curiosity. I've always been curious about it.
Yeah. I think it depends.
I suppose. Oh, go ahead.
There's many where we maintain it, and there's some that's just kind of a one and done thing. Like some, yeah. It's I need something that does A, B, and C, and once it's done, they use it. They're like, oh, can you change this and that? Okay. And then they're like, awesome, thank you so much. Now we don't have to go and buy this stuff, and they can use their money on other stuff that they need. And they don't need like updates and stuff like that, because it's not like these other nonprofits are full of volunteers. Like they may have a few employees depending on the nonprofit, but the goal is to just spread help to other people, and especially organizations that don't have vast resources.
That's cool. And so they do a lot of their projects sort of open source too, right?
Yeah.
Is it all of them, or are there some everything? Yeah, yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah, so you can just go on GitHub and go in there and check it out.
Anybody who's listening to this can go contribute, right? I think that's so cool. It's such a cool organization.
It makes stuff like that, like, really gets me jazzed up about open source. Just, you know how when you, if you toss a rock into a calm pool of water and the ripples go out, that's how I view open source. Like you can make a change on some code and it spreads from there. Whoever forks that repository gets your change. Whoever uses the software gets your change. And it spreads however far this piece of software goes. And you just don't know when you start. Like, there's that badge on GitHub, the Mars Rover badge. Like, so many people contributed to code that put a robot on Mars and didn't know until they got that badge. And it's like, who can say that? Like, oh yeah, you know, I wrote some code for the Mars Rover. Like, no big. So.
Yeah, I love that. I was just talking to someone last week about Hacktoberfest, and that happens in October, but I'm like already getting super excited for that. Cause I don't know. It's like, it's great to do it as part of virtual coffee and see people contributing, but there are so many good projects out there that people can contribute to, and figuring out, I don't know, the best way to put people in touch with them. Cause it could be overwhelming getting into open source, but like making that easily accessible is a goal for this year for sure.
Yeah, same. I'm trying to do that with the Ruby for Good website, trying to clean it It's I have a 3,000 line style sheet to clean up before Hacktoberfest kicks off. Also, my Hacktoberfest challenge from last year to virtual coffee went woefully unanswered.
What was your challenge?
Uh-oh.
Dan remembers, right?
I'm blanking now.
I said for every first-time contributor to make a pull request in October, I would take a shot. And I only took 3 shots the whole month.
Well, I think maybe you needed to take 70. Okay, so yeah. And pace yourself.
Well, yeah, that happened because we were so burnt out from Hacktoberfest that it took me like a month and a half to actually pull together any stats. And by that time I had totally forgotten.
Yeah,
well, we're just going to have to redo. We'll have to do a redo this year. Yeah, we'll do a meg shot counter. You know, we'll build it so that we won't forget. we'll have to think of some stretch goals and stuff because we also don't want we don't want you to die from too many shots. So
I'll be fine. I just might forget some things, like how to walk or
we'll make sure you're nice and comfy on your couch first.
Yeah, exactly.
I
had a silly origin story for Kirk, if you had time.
Yeah, before. Absolutely.
We talked about forgetting something. So in May, there's this thing called Philly Tech Week. And this year, it's going May 6th through May 14th. And it's put on by Technically Philly. A lot of the events are going to be virtual, I believe. I think some may be in person, but I think a lot will still be virtual. But this is a annual thing. I think it's the 12th year this year. I'm not positive. But in 2019, I applied for a scholarship to go to one of their keynote events and got the scholarship. And there was just like all day, all these presentations, and it was at, I'm pretty sure it was at the Comcast Center, because it's like one of the big tech hubs in Philly. A lot of people are reluctant about that being a big tech spot in Philly. Gritty was there. Gritty showed up in person. Yeah. It's really cool. Got to like network and meet a whole bunch of people. And then there was a after party thing to go out to a bar. And I networked with people at these tables and was talking with this one group, and the people just seemed super nice. I think I put down my backpack on the table and they came to set up, and I was, I don't know, moving things around my backpack or something and saying, oh, sorry, I'll get out of here. And they're like, oh no, it's fine. And we just started chatting, and I found them later at the happy hour. And it turned out that one of their C-level employees was visiting from the West Coast, and he was buying us all drinks for happy hour. He's like, hey, do you want a drink? Because I was just hanging out talking with them. And so I got like really ripped up on this company's dime and went to the after party's after party. and they had this awesome DJ. And that was like, technically Philly people were like, now we can let loose because the day's done. And they were all dancing and having fun and stuff. And then I looked at my clock and it was like 1:30 or something. And the last train had come and left.
Oh, no.
I was just like, oh, no. What do I do? And it was really warm. So I just walked around Philly and I was like trying to make it until the morning when the train station opened. Because I didn't have enough money to take an Uber home. And there's this guy, but some guy in a wheelchair scooter was coming down the street yelling at me. He's following me. And I'm just like, okay, I guess I'm going to have to like whip out the credit card and take the Uber. Wow. It was a great night.
Oh, that is awesome. Well, Meg, it's been really great having you on the podcast finally. Before we go, are there any last fun Philly facts that you would like to share with our listeners?
I would like to say we have amazing food. If you're ever in town, I encourage you go to the Reading Terminal Market. Basically, like weekdays are best because the Mennonite people are there with like that good home cooked Pennsylvania Dutch food. And although we've mentioned Gritty definitely more than 8 times this podcast, there's also the Philly Fanatic, who is an amazing mascot, and I can't leave him out either. Yeah. Those are my fun Philly facts for all of you.
All right. Thanks, awesome. Meg.
Thanks, Meg. Thank you for coming out. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Virtual Coffee Podcast. This episode was produced by Dan Ott and Becca Harrott-Weigel. If you have questions or comments, you can hit us up on Twitter at virtualcoffee.io or email us at podcast@virtualcoffee.io. You can find the show notes, sign up for the newsletter, check out any of our other resources on our website, virtualcoffee.io. If you're interested in sponsoring Virtual Coffee, you can find out more information on our website at virtualcoffee.io/sponsorship. Please subscribe to our podcast and be sure to leave us a review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.